assets transferred. You have to report the market value of any company asset transferred at the date of the transfer of the asset to the director or employee. This general rule applies if the asset sold or transferred was a car or any other asset that had never been used to provide a benefit. It could be a second-hand desk or a filing cabinet. However, if the company asset was previously provided as a benefit in kind, there are special rules, and the cash equivalent is then the higher of the market value of the asset at the date of transfer, or the market value of the asset when it was first provided as a benefit. And you can deduct from that any sums already taxed as a benefit on the use of the asset. We have to differentiate between goods that are purchased by the employer, where the cost rule would apply, and any goods that are produced in-house by the employer. The marginal cost of production, normally the wholesale price, would be used as the reportable benefit of goods manufactured by the employer, thus excluding any profit element which would otherwise be reflected in a substantially higher retail price. Any awards of readily convertible assets are not reportable on a Form P11D. They attract PAYE in Class 1 NICs and should be dealt with separately. Section B of the P11D, payments made on behalf of the employee. Here we have to report details of any payments made by the employer on behalf of the employee. For example, the settlement of the employee's credit card bill, a home telephone bill, or any school fees. Also included here would be the amount of any tax deductible on notional payments not immediately borne by the director or employee, and the special rules about making good within 90 days of the receipt of each notional payment. This can often relate to foreign stock, such as US stock, and it's important that the employer is aware of these and that the correct treatment is applied. PAYE should have been applied to the employment income provided in the form of a cash voucher or readily convertible asset or vouchers and credit tokens used to acquire such assets if they are readily convertible assets themselves. Section C is vouchers and credit cards, where we have to report any expense incurred in the provision of vouchers, including season tickets, capable of being exchanged for money, goods or services, and any additional expenses incurred in providing the benefit. We should provide details of all expenses and other payments made, but not those in connection with cars, which is covered by Section F, using credit cards or tokens, excluding amounts reported elsewhere, such as entertaining, travel subsistence, etc. We have to include the value of any vouchers on which Payers Union has been operated, perhaps luncheon vouchers, where the excess over the 15p per day exempt amount is put through the payroll. Remember also that vouchers are liable to Class 1 National Insurance contributions unless they're exempt, and that it should have been paid by the 19th of April 2008, otherwise an interest charge arises. You do not have to report the first £55 per week of any qualifying childcare vouchers provided by the employer, but if the employer gives more than £55 a week, the excess, and only the excess, should be reported here. Next is Section D, Living Accommodation, and there's Working Sheet Number 1 that's provided by HMRC to help the calculations here. The provision of living accommodation is a taxable benefit for any employee, not just P11D employees, so that's regardless of the level of earnings and has to be reported on Form P9D as well as the P11D. So the P11D Working Sheet can be used to calculate the cash equivalent. The basic charge is based on the greater of the annual or gross rateable value of the property or the rent paid by the employer, less any rent that might be paid by the employee. The benefit is prorated if the accommodation is only available for part of the year. We then have an additional charge called the yearly rent, which arises on property costing more than £75,000, including the cost of any improvements which are measured from the next tax year after the expenditure was incurred. Where the employer has owned or had an interest in a property for 6 years prior to the employee taking occupancy, you have to substitute market value for cost. And market value is defined as the price which the property might reasonably be expected to obtain on a sale in the open market with vacant possession. The value of any exempt job-related accommodation, such as a house or a flat occupied by a caretaker of a school or other premises, may be excluded from P11B reporting, where A, it is necessary for the proper performance of the employee's duties that he or she should reside in the accommodation, B, the property is provided for the better performance of the duties, and it is customary for employers to provide accommodation, or C, there is a special threat to the employee's security and special security arrangements are in force. You rarely see the security option. The first one, A, for employees' duties where it's necessary for the proper performance, common exemption there. The second one, where it's supposed to be customary for employees to provide accommodation, that's one that's often looked at and challenged by the revenue. Importantly, in terms of accommodation benefit, you have to remember to report other taxable benefits connected to the exempt accommodation. For example, the cost of light and heat or repairs and decoration costs if they're met by the employer. Where the occupation of the property is exempt, the payment of council tax and water rates is not a taxable or reportable benefit. Another taxable benefit that's connected to the accommodation would be the provision of furniture and fittings, where the use of assets rules 20% of the cost applies. This sometimes gets overlooked. The next section on the P11D is section E, mileage allowance payments and passenger payments. And again, we have working sheet number 6, which is provided to help you with the calculations and reporting. We have to report the excess over and above the authorised mileage rates, 40p a mile for the first 10,000 business miles and 25p a mile thereafter. For mileage allowance payments, the approved amount is the number of business miles travelled multiplied by the appropriate rates for the kind of vehicle used. A question to ask your client here is there a system in place to check if any director or employee has exceeded, say, the 10,000 miles at 40p and continued to get 40p? On passenger payments, the approved amount is the number of business miles travelled by car or van for which a passenger is carried, and in respect of which passenger payments are made, then multiplied by 5p per mile per passenger. And passenger payments can be paid in respect of company vans or cars for which the employees charge a benefit in kind, as well as on their own vehicles.